Stay tuned for
Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Only one of the parts. Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio. We are a radio show about young farmers, for young farmers, about, with, between, among. Today is a beautiful, very hot day in April. And I'm coming to you live from our Hudson headquarters, talking on the phone with Michael from the Brooklyn Grange, which, as you can imagine, is in Brooklyn. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Severin. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? Must be hot up on that roof.
Yeah. It's a bit windy today, but it's a beautiful day, a little less hot than yesterday. But we could do with some rain.
So here up in the Hudson Valley, it's very dry and dusty. And we have, like, the earth to hold water. You don't even have the earth. You just have this growing medium.
Yeah.
Explain how that works.
Yeah, we've got growing medium in 6 stories of office space below us. We're a soil media-based rooftop farm. In Long Island City, actually, that is where our flagship farm is located. Long story, basically, it's not too different from the traditional kind of green roof, architecture that's been around for a long time, using a couple different layers of green roof, root blocker, drainage board to hold moisture, and some felt material, and then we put about 1.5 million pounds of lightweight soil media on top of that. Raised it into beds and threw vegetables in it.
And what kind of production do you have off of that space?
We sold about 15,000 pounds of fresh seasonal veggies last season. We're a bit diversified. I guess it's a different kind of diversified than you guys would have in a traditional rural farm. We have a lot of events being kind of so conspicuous in the city, so we rent the farm out, the farm space out for private dinners and events and even weddings. We've got a wedding coming up this year, which will be pretty exciting. We have a couple laying hens, mostly for good karma on the farm. The kids who come up and visit really love them. And we actually, we've had a couple beehives over the last few seasons, and this season we actually just secured our funding through a Kickstarter campaign to start up the city's, I don't know if I should say first, but in recent memory anyway, first commercial scale apiary in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And we'll have about 25 to 35 beehives on rooftops there, producing thousands of pounds of honey for the city. So we got a lot of different lines of business going.
Golly, what fun. And a real startup culture, if I don't say so myself.
Yeah, the city, I mean,
you're meeting as a result of this Grange project.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I said, tell me about the kinds of people that you meet as a result of working in this community of the Brooklyn Grange. I would imagine there's quite a lot of ambition that heads in your direction.
Yeah, it really, I mean, we get people from every walk of life coming up to the farm, supporting the farm. Being in New York City, you know, in the outer boroughs, it's really great for us and other local urban farms because there's such a great food scene, especially in Brooklyn and the part of Queens that we're in here. There's a lot of really great small, you know, startups, restaurants, food businesses, food trucks, food vendors at markets around town. So we get to work with a lot of them, supply them with fresh produce that they can turn into awesome, you know, little dumplings and things. Just in terms of the general support here, everyone is really, really gung-ho about trying to green the city by using, you know, kind of these sort of rooftop and other urban agriculture techniques. And also, you know, to have a hyper-local source of food. I don't think anyone really thinks that, at least now anyway, that urban agriculture or, you know, at least rooftop agriculture will be able to to provide for all of the food needs of the inhabitants of a metropolis like New York City. But it's definitely a step in the right direction, I think, and people are really supportive of that and really jiving on what we're doing up here.
They're jiving. They're jiving live on the roof.
Yeah, it's funny, you're talking about being out in upstate New York. We are, being a soil-based farm compared to some of our other, colleagues in this space here in urban agriculture in the city, we made a definite decision to pursue soil-based agriculture. It's definitely not, natural soil. It's a fairly artificial environment. But we run into many of the same challenges as do, more traditional, small-scale, sustainable farms in a rural environment. We have to deal with erosion, and especially being up on the roof on a windy day like today, we really do lose quite a bit of our soil media and organic material every time we cut into our planting beds. So we take a lot of we're constantly learning and trying to up our game to keep soil nutrified, keep it on the roof, and keep our plants healthy. Irrigation is another interesting issue that we have. We use drip line irrigation set on pressure reducers off the municipal water supply of the city. but we try to use as little water as possible from that source and using the green roof infrastructure that we have and other rainwater catchment techniques, we try to keep it as natural as possible. But in a season like we've had so far that's been so damn dry, it can get pretty difficult.
Irrigating up here also already, I just think about using chlorinated drinking water for plants, and it makes my heart hurt a little bit. I mean, here we're like people who are purists, only want to use surface water and not well water for vegetables, because it really the soil biology impact of different kinds, the water has its own impact, obviously, and chlorine is obviously killing of life.
So, sure.
While I envy your social life, I don't envy your chlorinated water.
It's funny. I thought that by holding on to my position in the city and pursuing a career as a farmer that I might be able to maintain a social life. But as you well know, a farmer's work is never done, even on a rooftop in hyper-cool New York City. But you bring up a good point about the water source. It's things like that and the fact that we have kind of an artificial soil environment are things that we're constantly trying to test and make better to have a more sustainable system here, whether it's through rainwater catchment or other systems. So far, we haven't found any real kind of nasty pernicious effects on our crops or our soil health due to the municipal water, but it's definitely something that we keep our eye on and are working with researchers at local universities and schools and research institutions to try to put some hard data behind those assumptions.
So do you find yourself constantly being foisted into the position of having to represent the idea, the kind of abstract notion that we could feed the cities by farming the roof? I worry that if I were in your position, I would have to have that. I'd have to have like a laminated FAQ card in my back pocket to hand people and say something to the effect of, no, I don't believe we could grow all the food for the cities on the roof or something. But maybe you believe that, or maybe nobody asked that ever.
No, people do. In fact, some critics of what we're doing and other, like I say, other kind of urban farms here in the city come to us with their guns blazing and kind of making those comments. And all we have to do is, all I try to do really is just to say that the point really isn't to provide, every last vegetable or leafy green to everyone in the city, but it's definitely to kind of help create a model for sustainable for-profit, business enterprise based on urban agriculture that works and that can generate money and generate jobs and revenue. Also, looking to the environmental benefits of the work that we're doing and the educational and social impact that we have. It's a constellation of things. We're definitely a farm and our main priority is producing food. But no farm can produce everyone's food needs. So we need to work together, and we're hoping that by setting an example and constantly testing and constantly networking and spurring innovation in the space, that we'll have folks who can come and join and rival us and create, you know, competitive businesses and grow the space right now. I mean, the market in New York City is unlimited, basically, you know. And I think that there's also a big cultural shift that needs to happen, too, as, you know, probably everybody on this listening to this right now is aware. So much food, especially in the city, has gone to waste, you know, not only as kitchen scraps or, you know, the moldy lettuce that you might have in your refrigerator, but in the many, many, many dining establishments we have here, you know, so much. There's just so much refuse that could potentially be either viable food that people could take from, or you know, used for compost for more intensive growing. So, I guess the short of the long is that we're not making the claim that we're actually going to be feeding everybody in the city, but we hope that this will help explode an industry and a market that that might kind of start heading in that direction.
I mean, I'm in. I mean, rooftop composting, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a big focus that we have. You know, we actually are working on a campaign right now to raise some funds for a forced air composting system that will really kind of basically cover all of our composting needs on the farms that we have you know, contribute to soil fertility and things like that. There's just so much waste in the city. I mean, we work with a local organization called the Western Queens Compost Initiative, and that team actually brings up to the farm, you know, on a weekly basis, hundreds and hundreds and thousands even pounds of scraps and kitchen waste and, you know, stuff from cafes and local restaurants. And we're almost at capacity right now. So, yeah, we're definitely in need of a lot of big, smelly composters here in the city.
And have you done some thought ever about what kind of research would be most applicable to this? You know, it is basically a research question. You have, you know, you're a startup, you're a company, you're a 15, you know, you all look very glamorous and it's cool. But then, you know, have you put some thought into what would be the role of extension or research as to profitability, as to energy, you know, energy calorie that's used to produce the calorie and the kind of embedded energy and using these, you know, big cranes to move the soil up on top of the roof? And like what are the things that tickle you up at night when you think, I wish that somebody were studying this?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to look at everything that we possibly can. It's definitely in our plan.
No, not you. I'm not saying you should do it. I'm saying, what should someone else do?
I mean, I really think that looking into how to create more kind of sustainable, less input required, you know, artificial or more soil-based growing mediums on rooftops is definitely top priority. You know, our beds that we grow in are eroding by the day, and we do our best to keep organic material and health and vitality in the soil. But having a system in place, or researchers look to maybe incorporate some more permaculture-based principles, or other maybe more more applicable to rural agriculture, you know, sustainable principles here, with some minor tweaks that make them more appropriate to what we're doing. Definitely water research and how we can get clean, you know, off municipal line irrigation is something we desperately are seeking. you know, there are a whole host of things that we would definitely benefit from research-wise. So far, you know,
yeah, I mean,
we're entering.
You guys could be harvesting rainwater off of all the other roofs that are all around you. I could imagine, you know, easily like some kind of, you know, how right now we have these drains that connect the maple trees to each other. They're like little neoprene tubes, and it's like the high-tech way to gather maple syrup is to connect all your trees, like make a ley line, and then connect all your trees with neoprene tubes into the drip tank. Like,
yeah,
you know,
connect those to all the downspouts on our neighboring buildings.
Totally. I mean, and make it freaking, like, get some creative capital money or something, or creative time. You're like,
yeah,
you know what,
absolutely.
We're going to tap these roofs. That's what the Aboriginals did in Australia. They would make these little mud gutters on the big boulders in the middle of the desert, and they would use the rocks to harvest water for their little garden.
Through condensation?
No, I mean through occasional rainfall, and then they made these little gutters that would collect the rainfall, like of a boulder, and then it would funnel it down.
It's an interesting idea. I mean, we have
right.
Yeah, it's required. I mean, we're going to have to keep upping the game here and having other folks join and innovate with us. You know, we're one company and we're entering our third season, and we're just now kind of really hitting our stride on producing, you know, a full season slate of seasonal vegetables and every single square. I mean, we're an acre of space here in Long Island City, and we'll have a second location in the Brooklyn Navy Yard that's almost 50% larger in terms of growing space. So, every single square inch matters for us. We try to get it planted. So, unfortunately, the viability of, you know, doing research and testing, whether it's, you know, rainwater catchment or things like that, on our actual farm fields, quote unquote, is not really there right now. But looking into what we can do on the ground level or in, you know, the immediate vicinity of our farm buildings is definitely something that's a great idea.
Sounds like those who are interested in this project and who have skills at writing grants, or say you're unemployed and you don't have any skills that you've been able to market so far, grow some skills writing grants, or grow some skills hustling up some sponsorship, or grow some skills helping you. How would you need help? What help do you need on your farm? Are you completely overtaxed with applicants?
Yes, actually. I mean, being such a, I guess, a conspicuous farmer here in the city, I mean, I took a break to talk to you today during my kind of summer intern and apprenticeship interview. So we receive requests from people to join the team and help out in any way they can every day, dozens of requests. So labor right now is not really our main issue. It's more along the lines of folks who have come from maybe other industries or have had some experience in permaculture techniques, or even we welcome folks who have come off of, you know, careers or experience in rural farms and have learned a thing or two about being creative and reducing, you know, off-farm inputs. We welcome their input and their expertise. And grant writing and things like that, absolutely. we have a little trouble with that because we're a for-profit enterprise, but we can partner with other organizations locally or nationally or with just, you know, young, creative, inspired folks out there. We welcome all comers.
Well, that's so good. And I just want to make sure that you're telling all of your applicants that there is a really cool project up in the Bronx. Now, what are they called? His name is Andrew. He's super wonderful. They're growing food access gardens in the Bronx. It's called Ag Here, Be Here, Eat Here. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm familiar with him, but I don't know the name of the project, unfortunately. Go ahead.
Well, only that I know he was looking for an experienced grower or two, even for his team. Huh. And I'm now in the point where I get every day a couple of people who last minute had a friend drop out or fall in love or move to California or whatever, and who need to get their labor situation locked down. So Greenhorn has a very strong job section, and I hope that you will refer those people who you turn down to consider rural jobs also.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're in full support of rural farms, and like I say, we don't hope to take over for them here in the city. They definitely have an important role to play, and there are things that we can't do out here ever with regard because of laws and bureaucracy. I mean, we can't have dairy here. We can't have, you know, meat operations. So,
well,
we can't grow.
Hey, Michael, I'd like to be clear. I'm 2 hours north of you. I'm only 2 hours north, so there's people 17 hours north who might have other things to say, but we're not jealous. We're just kind of intrigued. But the point I think is a good one is that a lot of people are interested in trying something out on a small scale in the city, and if you look at the career trajectory of a lot of young farmers, you know, people start small, and people start with a relationship with a few plants or maybe a tomato on their balcony or a little garden or a community plot. And then that may change into a wolf experience that may then turn into an apprenticeship or a management experience. And that, you know, big farms start with small ideas and with small initiatives. So,
I mean, yeah, that's my experience. That's definitely my experience. And we really like to think of our farm as a young farmer incubator in a way, and hope that, you know, people in the city, young folks in the city who are considering a career in agriculture, don't necessarily have to completely uproot their entire life, or if they would otherwise be, you know, less prone to actually pursue a career, that they can come work with us or other urban farms here in the city and cut their teeth and learn some chops to see if it's right for them. You know, we really think that that's an important part of what we do here.
Well, awesome. I can't wait to learn more and see more. And when you start doing rooftop orchards to feed your bees, I can't wait to come to the first cider pressing.
Awesome. You'll be on the list.
Any resources that you've got that you usually get out as FAQs or places to point people who are interested to, you know, get into this urian and kind of philosophical implications of urban ag? Just maybe favorite books or thoughts?
Books and resources?
Books, organizations, people who give lectures, you know, your mentors, your, like, thought community?
Sure. Definitely a National Young Farmers Coalition, but you guys all know that. City Farmer is a really good online resource. There are a couple different web blogs and things that are compiling news stories. As far as books go, Columbia Earth Institute released a couple, I believe in 2010, a paper on the feasibility of urban agriculture that has a lot of really, really interesting data points. And while it's not necessarily a manual or like a how-to guide, it's something that I think is worth looking at for anybody who's curious. There's kind of a dearth, actually, right now in terms of really, really intensive handbooks and manuals about either rooftop urban agriculture or other kind of more intensive agriculture methods, maybe that aren't greenhouse or greenhouse-based. So hopefully with what we're learning every day here and what our colleagues in the space are learning, we'll be able to fill that hole in the coming years.
Let's keep filling the hole, identify the hole, and then fill the hole. A couple more to add is the toolbox for urban living, or for urban sustainable living. Like Scott Kellogg, he talks also about bioremediation. And then, I have another one, but I lost it, gone. Well, anyway, I'll remember it, and City's Book, which is about urban greenhouse cultivation that's produced by Vinny, who was on the radio also, and he's out of Baltimore. And it's just a sweetie pie and has open sourced all of his research, and it's just great. But I agree, this is a field that's emergent, and watch this space, everyone. Michael,
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor, Severin.
It's an honor. It's an honor. It's a mutual honor. This is Greenhorn Radio. We are here on Main Street in Hudson, New York, with our headquarters this coming weekend. Well, this weekend, Greenhorns is in Michigan at the East Lansing Art Museum called the Broad Center, doing a collaboration with Chris Haig and Amy Franceschini. It's called Land Use, the celebration of the legacy of the land-grant university system at Michigan State University and the new Broad Contemporary Art Museum. It's a community workshop space in the Bend and Barnes & Noble. If you're in Michigan, come on down. Then the weekend after is Farm Hack Ithaca, Farm Hack Essex Intervale. So it's at Essex Farm, and it's the Intervale Center in Burlington, Vermont. It's on both sides of the lake, but there's plenty of time on the ferry, and we've got a beautiful keg of Citizen Cider, a new startup cider company, donated Grange Hall dinner, sleep in a barn, and you get to meet the horses at Essex Farm. So that has only a few spots left. Go to farmhack.net, click on the schedule, and click on the RSVP link. There are carpools, many of them coming out of Boston, and probably a few out of New York as well. It is train accessible. So that's that for upcoming. If you're not on the Hudson Valley Young Farmer listserv, you can join it on the website of the National Young Farmers Coalition. I hope that you are having a good day, too. Signing off. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information.
Thanks for listening.